6-3, Daryl Perry et al. I hope I pronounced this right, versus Karian Swetlowski. As all parties are aware, the respondent did not file a brief. Therefore, appellant will just be permitted to argue for 15 minutes with no rebuttal. As I previously stated, this matter is being live streamed. In addition, an audio recording will be available tomorrow, but our rules prohibit private recordings by any parties. So I would ask everyone to respect that. Counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, just unmute yourself and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Kite. I'm an attorney out of Grand Forks, North Dakota. I represent the appellants, Daryl and Teresa Perry. They are the paternal grandparents of the children in these proceedings, and the respondent is the maternal grandmother. Initially, my clients brought a pro se action for grandparent visitation, and the respondent argued that they didn't have standing to bring the action. So the district court had already previously analyzed that my clients had standing to bring this action in for a grandparent visitation under 257C08. And so then after the parties stipulated to a final visitation arrangement that was approved by the court, they, about 39 days, I believe it was, passed, and respondent moved to vacate the grandparent visitation. And so I guess this is a really simple matter before this court, and it's whether the district court applied the right standard for modification. The district court entered an order outlining why she felt that she had discretion to make modifications as she saw fit, and or use 518.175. The district court also denied my client's evidentiary hearing. And so when you look at the statutes, 257C06 requires that all orders under that chapter be subject to Minnesota Statute 518.18 for modification. And I just would like to point out that yesterday,
Ms. Kite, the problem I'm having in your argument is, you know, 257 deals with custody, and the grandparents never had custody. All they had was visitation, which under both Supreme Court precedent, our U.S. Supreme Court precedent, our Supreme Court precedent, you know, is very, very limited. The rights of grandparents to see their children, whether that's right or wrong, you know, that's the law. So, you know, in this case, wouldn't we look to the stipulation? And since the stipulation was, you know, appears to have been violated in view of the findings of the court, why would we look to the statutes you're referring to, which pertain under which pertain to motions to modify custody orders or parenting plans? I mean, why wouldn't we just say, here is the stipulation, it was violated, allegedly, and you know, since the grandparents' rights to visitation are limited to begin with and were governed by the stipulation, once they violated that, you know, that's that. And there is no need for a hearing or, well, a hearing, evidentiary or otherwise. Now, why am I wrong, Ms. Kite?
Well, first of all, it's a preponderance of the evidence standard. And to me, that means you have to provide evidence, not just allegations, not just claims. And then
Is it your position that the grandparents did not violate the stipulation?
Go ahead. For sure. You know, I don't think that there's any findings that or facts that support that, even allegations that support that. I mean, to say that my client's daughter tried to put a phone number in one of the children's backpacks, or that my client showed the children a photo inadvertently on a phone and said, that is your biological father, that those aren't express provisions in the stipulation that they violated. So that's, in my opinion, that's an erroneous finding because it's a stretch on what the stipulated terms were. But in addition to that, I mean, the statute is clear that grandparent visitation modifications are under 518.18. And if legislation wanted to have it under a different statute, they certainly could have. And the court tried to say that, well, we have parents with visitation orders and they can bring it under 518.175. They can bring it sooner than 1 year. They can bring it at any time to make modifications. But I don't think legislation wanted grandparent orders to be open the floodgates and brought back into court at any time. And I would just want to point out that yesterday, this court, the Minnesota Court of Appeals, entered a precedential opinion in A230331 that addressed this exact same issue, albeit in a different context, that 518.18 is the appropriate modification standard for grandparent visitation, not custody. There is actually a portion of 257, I believe it was OC02, that talks about custody. When grandparents have custody, then they can be modified under any portion of 518. And so I think it's very clear what legislation intended. There's no ambiguities, and the district court simply got it wrong. Not only in the fact that the respondent could bring it when she did within 39 days, but also in denying the evidentiary hearing and requiring a prima facie case of either willful interference with the custodial parent-child relationship or substantial endangerment. And so I guess I just think that this is a very simple case. Legislation has made it very clear, and the district court simply got it wrong. And I also want to point out that I have two clients here. I have Daryl Perry and Teresa Perry. And respondent didn't even allege anything against Daryl Perry. So I cannot understand how a district court can vacate, terminate his grandparent visitation when there was not even a single allegation made against him. And so I think it should be clear that each party needs to have their own analysis here and not just lumped together. Aside from that, I raised an issue at the time of the hearing regarding personal jurisdiction under the UCCJEA. And I will admit that the UCCJEA does not apply to adoptions. However, prior to these children being adopted, there were several North Dakota proceedings, one in which was the termination of parental rights. And this Minnesota court, the district court, has never made any findings or never discussed or consulted with the North Dakota court. And so I'm not sure that the Minnesota court has subject matter jurisdiction. And when I raised that, the district court did not even acknowledge it in their order, which is why I raised it again here, because I think, you know, it could be a problem if my clients were to bring an action or let the North Dakota courts know, you know, they may have a different opinion, and it should be a finding that comports with the UCCJEA by either the Minnesota court or the North Dakota court. And quite honestly, under exclusive and continuing jurisdiction, I think it needs to be a conversation between the two courts.
Didn't you waive that argument when your clients brought the motion for visitation in Minnesota?
Well, I don't think that it can ever be waived. Subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time. But also, I just would like to point out that my clients actually brought this motion on their own pro se. They went on a website, something like LegalZoom or something like that, and got their documents and filed the action. It wasn't until their standing was questioned that they retained me as their attorney. And so, you know, they didn't necessarily know, but in any event, they didn't have to. You can raise subject matter jurisdiction at any time.
But the children reside in Minnesota, correct?
They do. And so they reside in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, and have ongoing contacts. And obviously they had grandparent visitation in Grand Forks, North Dakota. So it is potentially foreseeable that a North Dakota court could say that they still have exclusive and ongoing jurisdiction. And then I also wanted to point out that respondent didn't really brief this at the district court level. And obviously we know that they didn't brief it at the Court of Appeals level. And so I would just, I know that the district court made the decision, but I would like to say that respondent has waived those arguments by not raising them at the district court below. Any questions?
I don't see any, Ms. Kite.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kite. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days. Thank you.